Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Turning Towards Life. This is a Third Space production, and we're here again. And today it is our fourth birthday. So a whole 4 years of doing this every Sunday, Justin. And somehow we've arrived here at this crazy point, 4 years worth of doing this. It's such an extraordinary thing to take something step by step by step and then add up to something that's a 4 year birthday. I can't really believe that. It's so cool. So thank you, everybody, if you've been here since the beginning. Thank you if you've joined us recently or somewhere in the middle. It's a complete joy to know that you're here and that you're listening with us and that you make this possible for us to and also motivate us and inspire us to turn up here every week in amongst whatever our lives are in. And we are going to be reading and entering into a conversation about a source that Justin's brought us for this week, which actually has something to do with time, interestingly, that we're talking about 4 years worth of something. And it's a great joy, Justin, and a settler just to be back here entering into this conversation with you once more.
Thanks, Lizzie. Well, hello, everyone. I want to add my welcome to those of you who may be joining us for the first time on our fourth birthday, and to those who've been here all the way through, like we have, and everyone in between. And I'm feeling so keen, Lizzie, to have this be out in the world. So I'm also going to issue my, at this point, say, if you find these conversations moving and you want to share them with other people, you are so welcome to do that. So lovely to feel circles of community around this conversation. And we've often said this, Lizzie, I'll say it again, that the kind of faithfulness that it's taken to do this again and again and again over 4 years and to be planning on continuing has been such a gift to me. And I'm thinking a lot about what it is to be faithful to something, you know, to keep on turning up even when it gets tiring, or even when it's difficult to get organized in time, or even when the technology fails. There's something, seems to me, extraordinarily real and rewarding about just turning up and turning up and turning up and turning up. And so here we are again, 209 times in, I think. So I chose this source for this morning. For anyone who's new to us, we start off every week with a source, something that sort of pours out into our conversation, like the source of a river or the source of a spring, and then our conversation unfolds from there. And I did deliberately choose one about time to go with our 4 years of doing this. But also, I'm in the middle of reading this very wonderful book by Oliver Berkman called 4,000 Weeks, which is really asking this big question about how should we live in time, in the time that we have, or maybe even the time that we are. And this piece you can find, everyone, always on in our Facebook group. So if you're a person who uses Facebook, you can join us on Turning Towards Life. But it also comes out with a podcast version in the show notes, as they're very grandly called. And also we have a lovely website, turningtowards.life, where a little bit after our live conversations, this recording goes live, and the source is there as well. So this is called The Discomfort of What Matters. Why exactly are we rendered so uncomfortable by concentrating on the things that matter to us, the things we thought we wanted to do with our lives, that we'd rather flee into distractions, which, by definition, are what we don't want to be doing with our lives? Whenever we succumb to distraction, we're attempting to flee a painful encounter with our finitude, with the human predicament of having limited time, and more especially in the case of distraction, limited control over that time, which makes it impossible to feel certain about how things will turn out. When you try to focus on something you deem important, you're forced to face your limits, an experience that feels especially uncomfortable precisely because the task at hand is one you value so much. You're obliged to give up your godlike fantasies and to experience your lack of power over things you care about. What we think of as distractions are just the places we go to seek relief from the discomfort of confronting limitation. checking your phone beneath the dinner table is what you do because it's hard to focus on the conversation, because listening takes effort and patience and a spirit of surrender, and because what you hear might upset you, so checking your phone is naturally more pleasant. The most effective way to sap distraction of its power is to stop expecting things to be otherwise, to accept that this is simply what it feels like for finite humans to commit ourselves to the kinds of demanding and valuable tasks that force us to confront our limited control over how our lives unfold. There's a very down-to-earth kind of liberation in grasping that there are certain truths about being a limited human from which you'll never be liberated. And you don't get to dictate the course of events. And the paradoxical reward for accepting reality's constraints is that they no longer feel so constraining.
When you try to focus on something you deem important, you're forced to face your limits. An experience that feels especially uncomfortable precisely because the task at hand is one you value so much. You're obliged to give up your godlike fantasies and to experience your lack of power over things you care about. What we think of as distractions are just the places we go to seek relief from the discomfort of confronting limitation. What we think of as distractions are just the places we go to seek relief from the discomfort of confronting limitation. Checking your phone beneath the dinner table is what you do because it's hard to focus on a conversation, because listening takes effort and patience and a spirit of surrender, and because what you hear might upset you, so checking your phone is naturally more pleasant. The most effective way to sap distraction of its power is to stop expecting things to be otherwise, to accept that this is simply what it feels like for finite humans to commit ourselves to the kinds of demanding and valuable tasks that force us to confront our limited control over how our lives unfold. There's a very down-to-earth kind of liberation in grasping that there are certain truths about being a limited human from which you'll never be liberated. You don't get to dictate the course of events. And the paradoxical reward for accepting reality's constraints is that they no longer feel so constraining.
Thanks, Lizzie. I love this idea. It feels so dignifying and humanizing, that all the ways that we distract ourselves from the things we really care about. So I love that this is about how we distract ourselves from what matters to us, not the stuff that we don't want to do, but from the stuff that we do want to do. Like talking with the people we love, like, you know, really speaking to people, or completing a project, or listening to a piece of music we've been longing to listen to, or whatever it is. That it's completely understandable that we distract ourselves, and that the reason that we distract ourselves is it's really hard, really, really hard to be confronted with a realization that even in, especially in the things that we really care about, we're not in control. I think we have this, I know I have this, you know, sometimes have this fantasy. I was thinking about it lots with music. I've got a vinyl record player recently, and I've been getting out music that I love that I have on vinyl and sitting down to listen to it. And I can feel the anticipation of it. I'm going to sit and listen to this or that. And as I come into it, I can feel all the ways that I'm diverting and distracting, and I put the music on and then I want to go make a cup of tea, or that's not even with a person, that's with, And the relief in reading Oliver Berkman's words to see that the reason that I get distracted is not because I'm some kind of terrible person, but because the moment I encounter the thing that it matters to me is the moment I find out that it's never going to be exactly the way I imagined it. And I'm never going to be able to make it exactly the way I imagine it, because stuff's happening in me all the time. And of course, if I'm with you and talking to you, Lizzie, stuff's happening in you all the time. And then I have to face very, very quickly that I'm not in control. And this is, I think this is the best line in the whole thing for me anyway. You're obliged to give up your godlike fantasies. I realize that it's really easy to wish that whatever I'm doing will feel like I'm never going to be affected by anything I don't want to feel or don't want to have happen. And I can be in control of all of the outcomes. And so running away into something else, and of course the world is filled with all these things. Maybe it's always been filled this way, but these days we've got devices and all kinds of things that can kind of keep on calling to us and bleeping to us. That at least there I can feel like I'm in charge again. Which is a way, way, way smaller version. So I see this in myself. Oh, I can replace the thing that really matters to me where I'm not going to feel like I'm in charge because it's big enough and wide enough and deep enough that all kinds of things can happen. And if I replace it with something where I can feel for a little while like I am completely in control because I've kind of numbed myself out and zoned myself out and made the circle of my own concerns and experience really small, then I'll be relieved of the feeling that my life is finite and I'm not in control. So there's so much more to say about this, but that seeing, oh yeah, that's what we do, has been so much more helpful for me than I must be some kind of terrible person because I can't always keep pure attention, even when I'm speaking to my son with a conversation I really wanted to have, part of me is wanting to get out.
Gosh. As you're speaking, Justin, I can feel the grief in me of the cost of not accepting our limitations. You know, if I keep doing this, things that don't get turned towards, that are calling to me, I suddenly feel a kind of sadness at seeing that they might not ever get attention. And, you know, you were saying people and conversations that are important to have. I notice I often have a fantasy about the conversations that I want to have, and then they don't happen because I'm too afraid of how they're going to go. I'm too afraid of what will happen if I say that. So I think, oh, I'll just carry on doing the conversations we can do rather than have the ones that I want to have. And sometimes I feel, so I think it's safe to say this, but at the moment I've got, you know, it's weird doing this when you have a family and they might listen and things like that, but I have a pocket of letters on my desk that got written to my dad and that he wrote as well, and all of his family around his brother who died. And he was very young when that happened. And these letters that me and my sister found when we were cleaning out my granddad's house. And I really want, that really matters to me, to talk about that with my dad. And I'm so afraid of the grief that might be there, that I just keep this thing of letters on my table. So when you were saying about, you know, just the distractions that can happen, it feels to me like it's not only my, you know, the everyday stuff, but also the parts of me, which I'm not sure I could call a distraction, but they are distracting from the thing I would like to do. So I'm now wondering about the kind of courage it takes to be with the parts that feel tender and afraid, and what I could do to turn towards them so that it allows me to go and say, Dad, I've got these letters and I don't know what to do with them and how to speak to you about them, but I feel called to be in it with you somehow. And somehow this conversation about time and the uncomfortableness of concentrating on the things that matter to us You know, in a way, if I sat down and concentrated on that for a while and thought about it and thought about a time that would be good, a way I could say it, and actually designed something that was sensitive and kind and the right people were there, and I could easily do that. And yet the envelope sits there looking at me and I get into all kinds of distractions away from something that keeps coming up when I'm going to sleep or when I'm in the shower. Those ordinary moments, I think, all those letters, the letters. And so I really don't want to not have that conversation and my dad not be here anymore. It feels really important. Like something would get told, something would get connected, we would find some common ground that was important to our spirits being in this lifetime together as a family and things like that. So I'm really moved to consider this, because one thing is, Justin, the limitation that we have of that we're going to die. I seem to be in denial about that when I think about this thing, which is because anything could happen at any moment, which would mean I wouldn't be able to talk about the letters, either if I went or anyone else went. And so I'm in a subtle kind of powerful denial about that could happen any time. And if I really let that sink in, I'd phone him today. Because I don't know what's going to happen with this time that we have, that we are. Mm-hmm. So I'm really very kind of gently called to my brave parts that can say, it's okay. I can bring my wise self when I consider this passage of writing and say, it's okay. I've got my breath. It will be okay. I can trust, as you said, like what unfolds, like I can stop trying to control. So one way of saying it is I'm controlling the outcome of this by not doing anything at all. Because by doing nothing at all, I'm in control of whether something gets felt or something gets seen or something gets spoken about. And that feels much safer than putting my foot through the door and saying, there's these letters.
I'm so glad you brought this in. And it seems to me that this language of parts that you're using is so helpful. Because I could hear this in you and I could feel this in me. Maybe to say it this way, that there are parts of us, there are certainly parts of me that would so much rather that I didn't feel the anxiety, the uncertainty, the grief, frankly, the joy, like the real joy. There are parts of me that so want to avoid the feeling of not being controlled and not being in charge and being limited, and there being limited time, that those parts would rather that I turned my life again and again and again to much smaller, much safer domains in which I didn't have to feel any of that stuff. Mm. And that was the way you described it, was seeing that in a way it can feel like such a relief, a sort of superficial relief really, but it can feel like such a relief not to throw ourselves into the big, wide open, intimate, contactful, who knows what kind of spaces, when those parts of us so desperately want to keep us in this this sense that we're in control and we're in charge of it all. And so let's be in control of something really, really tiny, like refreshing my email feed or refreshing my Facebook feed or whatever it is. And that, and you said this about yourself, Lizzie, that there's something else of you. There's something wise and wide and deep. And I want to say timeless about us. That when we can locate that in ourselves or that of ourselves, we start to have a chance essentially of saying to all these frantic protector parts of us that are much smaller than us and super well-intentioned, but ultimately have a much smaller view of what life is possible maybe I wonder we can say to those parts, it's all right, I've got you. You don't have to, you frightened, wanting to be in control part. You don't have to be in charge here. I've got this, I'm on this. And then sometimes those frantic, fizzy parts relax just a little bit. And the seemed to me, as you said it, that the wise part of us is the part that gets that. We're finite and constrained. It's the truthful part of us. It gets that you won't be here always and your dad won't be here always. And none of us will be here always. And now is the time, however tricky it is, to step in.
Maybe that tender, slower space is also what is being avoided as well. Like there's a response that's coming in me that's quite tentative, that feels quite confronted by the possibility of this lettuce thing, just to use that as an example. And so I can find myself becoming a bit small and a bit kind of intimidated by it. And this tender place of admitting there's something that we want to do is also something that feels like it, like I could really distract myself from that. I could really do 100,000 things and not that thing. And not because it's some big, huge, scary something, but just because it's tender. So it feels like it really takes some stillness to work through this. And I think that's the nature of Oliver Berkman's book as well. It's so, what's the word? Like throwing, like it's like reading it throws me into questions that feel really, really big and really significant. And almost every few paragraphs needs a conversation like this to kind of unpack it and feel into what it actually means then. If this is hitting me this way, what does that mean? What, it's a hard book to read without it throwing us into something that needs to be talked about. I don't feel like I'm able to really sit with the consequences of this on my own, because it will just be too big for me. And so, you know, when we read sentences like, what's the one? Oh yeah, distractions are the places we go to seek relief from the discomfort of confronting limitation. It's like, hold on a second, like just that sentence, we need to sit with that for ages and understand what that means and feel into what it is to be limited. What are those limitations? And how do you face them and let them in? I remember, Justin, reading, I can't remember the name of the book, but it's one of Norman Fisher's book. And I think it's like called Taking Our Places or something like that. And he talks about impermanence, and it's one thing to consider impermanence, like could be gone, will be gone. We don't know the timing, but it will be gone. But it could be gone tomorrow, it could be gone in a week, it could be gone in 16 years, whatever. But he does this meditation on like letting it become true in our bodies that that's real. So just to know it isn't really enough. It's like we have to go, okay, so I read the sentence. How does that kind of shimmy down into my being, into my bodily understanding, an intimate understanding of what the consequences of that reality, that limitation actually are? So it also feels like this needs reflection time and really gentle allowing and gentle seeping in to let this be true. Like when you and I finish here, Justin, I'm going to go and have some breakfast and have a cup of tea, and I can feel the possibility of just distracting myself completely from having even been in this conversation. So I really feel like I have to say that to kind of open a space for me to not do that even just a little bit, so that I can make my cup of tea with this feeling, this tenderness, this arresting kind of, my goodness, I'm in avoidance of this all the time.
I love this word tenderness you're using, Lizzie, because I think it's so, I think it's so kind towards this in us. Because really what we're talking about here is grief.
Yeah.
What we're talking about is grief that this will end. I feel lots of it saying this, you know, you'll end and I'll end, and this project that we're on our fourth birthday of will end. And grief that I'm not in charge. Because isn't that my right, that I should be in charge of my life and my experience? And grief that things aren't going to turn out the way I imagine them to. And that's why I love your language of parts, because I want to, in a way, what I want to do is I want to scoop up the parts that feel, both the parts that feel the grief and also the parts of me that desperately don't want to feel any of that. That want to compartmentalize it and put it all away, and would rather that I distract myself than feel it. And to sort of take them by the hand and say, come and sit with me. And let's see if we can find it in ourselves to, for there to be enough love here of our broken, fragile incompleteness and everyone else's, that we can step in together, feeling all the feelings of what it is to do anything. And it's such a, where this conversation has led me into is it's quite revelatory to see that grief is always in the middle of what we most care about, where we love the most, what's most joyful for us, genuinely joyful. It always has this undercurrent, because we always know somewhere, we always know about the ending of things and the incompleteness of things and how limited our power is to be in charge of everything. And that maybe part of the path is learning to hold the joy and the grief together, the commitment and the tenderness, you know, the longing and the brokenness, to hold them all together and to see if we can learn more and more to include all of that. Not in a one way into this conversation, I don't think Oliver Berkman is doing this, what I'm about to say, and it doesn't seem it's helpful. One way would be to sort of brutalize ourselves with it, to say just face the reality of it. But I don't think that honors the tender grieving parts of us enough. So I'm where I am right now with this conversation is in great joy at the wonder of being in this conversation right now with you and with everyone who is around us, and letting myself feel the grief at its finiteness and our finiteness. And it seems to me that that's probably the invitation, that's the path to walk here.
I can find a part of me that also is kind of annoyed that this is just like what it is to be human, you know, the kind of like, it seems that, like you said, anything that's worth turning towards in my life has these multitudes of things about it that have love and loss. And I can feel so strongly the part of me that wants to grapple for things to be finite in terms of this is what they are and that's what they are. And yet it's just all a grand mystery. You know, everything feels like sand running through my fingers. I can't hang on to anything. Yet I want to hang on really tight. And it's hard. You know, it's hard and it's joyful, it's painful and it's excellent. It's feels like I'm continually experiencing multitudes of things right at once. And I'm sure there's simplicity in there somewhere, but I can feel the more I see, the more I understand, the more complex and mysterious the nature of all of this is. And why wouldn't I protect myself against that? You know, why wouldn't I shut down? Why wouldn't I avoid all of the things? And so I think, you know, what moves me, Justin Strohs, when you were saying what you just said, is like, I feel like there's a place where I can also trust that things, I don't have to try and encounter everything and get everything out of the box and make sure everything's fine because we're all going to die or something. It's like I can trust the unfolding and the process and make a commitment inside myself to attend to the things that call me. It's not like I have to do an inventory or something, but I do want to say, when an envelope keeps asking me, I'm going to stop and say, come on, envelope. I'm not going to go through the whole filing cabinet and find a load of things that we probably need to talk about. But I am going to say yes to the envelope. I'm going to say, you keep asking me. I'm going to let you go like that on my skirt. But I'm going to call, I'm going to turn towards you and say, what are you doing that for? And I'm going to let things unfold as they naturally are asking to unfold and trust that process and see what I can do to say hello to the parts that are afraid. And thank you. Say thank you for doing that for me. And there's something big I have to attend to here as well, but you can be right there. But there's more. And so I'm grateful that I've got some sight of not letting the frightened part be all of me and determine the actions that get to be taken or not.
Seems like such a fitting place to end, Lizzie, with what you said, that it's hard and it's joyful and it's painful and it's excellent. This life, and we don't have to take it all on. We don't have to respond to this difficulty by somehow expecting that we're going to be throw ourselves in fully to every single thing in some grand superheroic endeavor. But what we can do is gently lead ourselves tenderly into each thing as it arises. Maybe that's the path, and it's a path. So thank you for walking this path with me, Lizzie. Stepping into our finiteness by coming back again and again and again. And thank you everyone who's with us as we mark our fourth time round the sun together in this conversation, the end of our fourth time and the beginning of our fifth. We'll be back next week.
Thank you everybody, we'll see you for the beginning of our fifth whole year next week.
Bye bye everyone.
Bye.